Okay, we're going to take your phone calls this hour with Mark Robert Waldman as we talk about their work, which is an incredible book called How Enlightenment Changes Your Brain. Share some of your stories with us, too, when we come right back. Okay, welcome back. Mark Robert Waldman with us. Your calls, too. Mark, the motivational speaker, Tony Robbins, had something to do with some prayer. Can you tell us that story?
Yes. Tony was involved with a lot of individuals who, in the East, there's a practice known as Shaktipat, and that certain gurus were purportedly had the power to transmit information directly from them to the other person without words, simply by being in front of them, simply by using their thoughts, their intention. And so Tony brought together a bunch of these individuals and brought them together into Andy's Brain Scan Lab, which at that time was at the University of Pennsylvania. And here's what happened. One person was put in a room, and she was isolated from the healer, who was in another room, and she had some IV tubes hanging out of her arms. We used SPECT scans, which are a little bit different, and so when you think a particular event is taking place, you can put a little bit of radioactive dye into it. It goes right up into your brain, breaks down, and stays there, so you can walk down the hallway, go take a nap on this table while these huge magnets go around your head, and take a picture of what was going on in your brain at the moment of that particular activity. And that's how you can capture people doing things like dancing around and moving and find out what's going on in their brain.
Mm-hmm.
So this woman was in this isolated room, and they were doing what's called the oneness prayer. And the person was sending their intentions, and she didn't know when he would be sending the intention or not. So when he did send that intention out to her, guess what we saw in the recipient's brain?
What'd you say?
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing. So many people have attempted to do these types of experiments. You know, you mentioned earlier in the previous show about the transcendental meditators, you know, were they using intention and meditation mm-hmm. and prayer to lower activity, you know, to stop the crime in Washington, D.C.? And one of the reasons why nobody will trust anybody who puts out research from the Maharishi University is they made it up. It actually, if you go look up the records, crime actually went up during that particular period of time. So although we now know that transcendental meditation is as effective as any other form of contemplative meditation, they unfortunately faked that particular study and they lost the respect in the scientific community. So this is another intention experiment. So we were disappointed in that. We were certainly hoping to be the first people to capture the notion that, yes, a person's thought can actually leave your head and move through rooms to an isolated individual. And so then Andy brought the individual out to stand right in front of the healer, which is the way it's usually done in the East. Sometimes I remember going to Guru Ma, and God, the room is filled with 1,000 individuals, and this is a woman with the most infectious smile you've ever seen. And at the end, you stand in line, and she gives you a Shaktipat hug. And yeah, I felt high for several days after that. But am I just resonating to the energy of the room and my hopes and wishes that something had imparted to me, or something really happened? So we're always trying to find out, can we find any truth behind this? So we know that when two people are facing each other and paying attention to each other, one brain begins to fire to resonate the activity going on in the other person's brain. This is what empathy is. We watch the facial expressions and tone of voice, and then our brain begins to fire like the other person. So here's the person sitting right in front of our test subject, and he's trying to impart these thoughts, this wisdom to her. And guess what we found happened? Absolutely nothing.
Again.
No. Yeah, again. And this was really perplexing to us. That didn't make any sense at all, because of what I just explained about the brain's ability to empathically resonate to anybody else who you see or you hear. And we know that a lot of intercessory prayers, for example, the studies that were done in the late 1990s and early 2000s, they all showed that people were getting better when you were praying for people at a distance. And then those same individuals did even better studies, and this is like Herb Benson at Harvard University, and even Dean Radin, who I'm sure you know, who does all incredible site research. Well, in these studies, they found out that the people who were being prayed for were doing slightly worse. So you got to be careful. If you're praying for some, you know, if you're praying for somebody, you might be making them worse. But what that does in research is it washes the studies out. So all we can say is, well, some of the studies say yes, the other studies say no. Maybe something's going on. Maybe nothing's going on. Go do some more research. So what we did this time and what Andy did is that he did a brain scan of the person doing the intention experiment. And that is where we saw a remarkable finding. His frontal lobe activity was dropping. His parietal lobe was dropping. His consciousness was disappearing. He was entering a trance state that was similar to the Brazilian mediums, similar to the Pentecostal speaking in tongues. So the conclusion that Andy and I came to from this is that we may not be able to influence the world with our thoughts. We may not even be able to influence our wives when we wish we could, but these types of practices are really good and great and healthy for your own brain. As Andy was saying earlier, some of these studies show that advanced meditators who've been doing this for a long time, they end up with a thicker neocortex. This means that you're less likely to get age degenerative diseases. And they also find that the more you do meditation, the more it shrinks your amygdala. And the amygdala is that part of your brain that reacts to fear and worry and upset. So you can actually restructure your brain. You can change some of the structures in your brain by as much as 10%. And one of Andy's amazing studies is that the thalamus, which he mentioned earlier, which we believe is how the brain processes sensory reality, the thalamus reacts to touch, smell, taste, and sound, it also responds to our thoughts as if they were real. So that's what happens when you're having a negative thought. What's happening is that your thalamus is saying, danger, something wrong is happening in the world, and it sends an alarm signal to the rest of the brain. And if you're having a positive thought or a pleasurable memory, the thalamus is saying, oh, something wonderful is happening. Go ahead and relax. It's safe. And none of this has anything to do with what's actually happening out in the world. So we see that when this person is attempting to impart knowledge and wisdom to somebody else, they're doing something inside of themselves that's very healthy for them. So what we're doing now is that we're recommending, by all means, send your prayers and intentions to other individuals. But if possible, don't do healing at a distance. Get on the phone, have the person use their cell phone connection, have a video set up, at least be on the telephone with them, and have the person do a prayer and meditation with you that they love doing. If you have any friend or any person who's ill or sick or suffering, engage them in some kind of meditation or chanting or even just repeating the word peace, 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 over and over and over again. Herb Benson at Harvard University discovered that if you repeat a word like that for 20 minutes a day, in 8 weeks, you turn on 1,200 stress-reducing genes. That's mind-blowing. That sure I think is. I mean, that's more important than being able to heal a person at a distance. So we can teach our friends how to change their brain in ways that will make it preventative for getting age-related disorders. There are studies now showing that mindfulness can actually prevent you from getting cancer, and it's effective for treating cancer. And these are meta-analytic studies.
It's that powerful?
Yes.
That's truly remarkable. Let's go to some calls here for you now. Let's go to Donna in Arizona to get things started. Donna, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thank you.
Sure.
My question is, I'm wondering if you've tried any of these techniques with kids with ADHD or with bipolar or with PTSD.
Yes, yes, and yes. And again, what we find is that when you do these softer, more contemplative practices of learning how to concentrate on a single sound or a particular word, if you even just take the time and you just watch your own breathing, just like take one mindful breath in, and as you breathe in, just notice how the air feels going into your nostrils. And then as you breathe out, just notice how the air is slightly warmer. And then shift your attention to your chest and belly. And as you just naturally breathe, notice how your chest rises and fall, rises and fall. When you turn your attention onto your natural breathing, we now have 40 years of documented research that stress levels go down. And we're finding specifically when you do these mindfulness-based meditations, ADD, ADHD, symptoms begin to go away. You can teach a person how to concentrate for about 3 or 4 minutes. And then, as I mentioned in the earlier part of the show, if you deliberately stop when you're starting to feel a little bit of stress, just to yawn and stretch and let your mind wander and daydream for a minute, that allows your brain to refresh all the neurochemicals so that you can concentrate again. One of the mistakes we make is asking our kids to concentrate all the time. And when I was a kid, you know, you get a little piece of information in, and remember how I said you can only hold a few chunks of information at a time? Then your brain has to go off and daydream to incorporate it. And so you're staring out of the window, and the teacher yells at me, "Hey, Mark, get your attention back over here." And that destroys the learning process. That's why what we're teaching at LMU now is brain-based experiential learning, and we're asking our students to pay attention to 5 minutes to this important information, and then we ring our bell again, and we ask people to listen to that bell and yawn and stretch. And we found at Pierce College, a community college, that if we asked students just to yawn for 3 or 4 minutes or just remain still, their grades went from a C to a B or a B to an A. Imagine that. Can yawning actually increase your grade point average? And the answer is yes. Relaxation will do that. Stress reduction will do that. And we're finding that these very gentle meditation strategies are having an effect with people with all kinds of brain disorders as well.
Next up, we have Bill in Kentucky. Hey, Bill, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, I have a pretty simple and direct question, but I want to give you some background as to why I ask it.
Sure.
I have always been what they call absent-minded, and I heard about this study in physics on whether or not we're actually living in a big simulation. Now, normally I wouldn't be, you know, interested in something like that, but I noticed something. Like, when I think about the concept of solipsism or, you know, wondering about the existence of anything beyond your own mind, I notice something happens with me. Like, when I'm thinking about it, I start to see signs and just little indicators of things that I have forgotten. You know, my absent-mindedness has caused me to forget. So I'm like sitting there going, weird, that is an incredible coincidence. And
I don't think that's weird at all. I think you're actually becoming aware of how your brain and mind actually functions.
What I'm wondering about, the physicist Neil deGrasse Tyson, apparently he says that it is possible that we are just living in a simulation. So now my question is very simple. As far as solipsism goes, have you ever medically observed anybody thinking about that whole entire concept, that whole philosophy?
Yes, that is the whole purpose. Like when we study Zen meditators, they're simply focusing on pure consciousness. And that's what I was saying earlier. You know, we don't really see colors in the world. Our frontal lobes create a fantasy imagination of what our visual cortex has seen. We're never in touch with reality as it actually is. But the more we become aware that we are not aware, this drives us to become more curious. The amount of curiosity human beings have from the moment of birth is one of the things that distinguishes us from all of the other mammals. We're constantly questioning everything. And that's what you discover in mindfulness, is that, yeah, we are kind of living in the dream state. We are living in a fantasy reality created by some of the most powerful imagination networks in our frontal lobes.
What a great science this is, Mark, huh?
It's cool.
It really is. And how can you use it to truly better your position in life?
I'll give you the perfect example of how to apply this. If the reality we are perceiving at this moment is not true, when I think somebody has pissed me off, it may have nothing to do with the other person at all. So I have to stop for a moment and I pull back. And I may find out that the reason why I'm upset isn't that the other person pissed me off, but they said something that just contradicted my own belief system, that was arbitrarily constructed out of fantasies. So if we stop for a moment and do that yawn and stretch and mindful reflection just for a few seconds, we calm down, we become more observant. We see that more parts of the brain begin to light up. We're optimizing our brain. We see things in a new way, and even if it goes against our old beliefs, it always creates, oh, wow, or aha. We see life anew. It's like if you were, like, you can apply mindfulness example to walking. And instead of just walking regularly, what if you took 5 minutes to take just one step? What does it feel like to lift your foot off the ground? What does the ground actually feel like? And you discover there's all of these sensations, there's all of this richness in life that we never are aware of because we're caught up in our thoughts. Never really smell the roses.
Here's something we touched on in the first hour a bit, and before we go to the break, what do we mean by enlightenment? What does that actually mean?
In the East, it means I have come to the realization that everything that I thought was real or true isn't, that there's an entirely different reality outside of ourselves than we were aware of. In the West, enlightenment took on a different meaning in the 1600s. And that was when enlightenment is like to bring into light, to bring a person out of ignorance into the light of reason and rationality. So in the West, enlightenment was simply to gain scientific insights. Well, we've just put those two together. Why can't you have both? A whole bunch of tiny insights can lead you to that big, oh, wow, experience, that big E experience, that enlightenment experience, which means your old belief systems fall away, you see the world or yourself in a brand new way, and what we find is that everyone who has that experience, their life feels more satisfying, more rich, they feel more grateful, they're happier, and it's permanent.
Mark's website, of course, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, as is Dr. Andrew Newberg's. The book is called How Enlightenment Changes Your Brain. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls. Next hour, we talk about the Akashic Records with Kelly Maroon, PhD, and she's going to take us on a study that has been for 25 years. So that's an amazing story all by itself. Don't touch your dial. We'll be right back. Couple of events I want to let you in on. Those of you in the greater St. Louis area, come to our June 18th live stage show event at Lindenwood University. Full information on what I think will be an amazing program you can find at our website, coasttocoastam.com. It's right there on the homepage. And also in Asheville, North Carolina, I'm going to be out there in August 27th at the Diana Wortham Theater. So please come on by for that. Those of you in that area, that's a smaller stage and venue. It's going quickly. I'm going to give you a website and a toll-free number. DW Theater, I'll spell it for you, T-H-E-A-T-R-E, dwtheater.com, or call 828-257-4530. Come on out, because Joshua P. Warren will be with me, and we'll be talking about all kinds of things. So two events, St. Louis, Asheville, North Carolina. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Mark Robert Waldman with us, and your calls, of course, as we talk about his work that he wrote with Dr. Andrew Newberg, How Enlightenment Changes Your Brain. What if you damage your brain, Mark? You bump your head or something. Does that affect all of this?
Yes, it does. I always remember asking Andy one day why he chose to go into the field of brain research rather than become a neurologist. And he said, sadly, after 50 years of research, we don't know that much more about that. One individual can have a stroke and literally lose half the functioning of their brain, and 5, 6, 7 months later after intense therapy can be pretty much functioning normally. Somebody else has a little tiny pinhole stroke and they're barely functional. They lose their ability to speak or to be aware. It really is the most amazing creature in the world up there. People look at the brain as if it's this organ, but each neuron, each nerve cell actually is constantly growing axons and dendrites out of either end of it to collect information and pass it on. And Eric Kandel won the Nobel Prize for this. You can take a single nerve cell and you can teach it to become more inquisitive about the world, or you can traumatize it to make it so afraid of exploring the environment that it dies. What you have are 80 billion neurons constantly moving around, connecting and disconnecting from each other in your brain. You have another 80 billion glial cells, and glial cells, they thought that was the glue that held neurons in place. And now you can actually see them floating around, helping injured neurons to heal and recirculating the neurochemicals. This is Facebook on steroids.
It sure is. It sure is. And Mark, when you got involved in this, and of course, a part of your study program is called neuroleadership. What is that?
Neuroleadership, what we're attempting to do is find small key elements. Are there practical techniques and strategies that we can pull from neuroscience? Now, when you're teaching busy executives, MBA students, how to function better in the workplace, they're not going to sit down and do a 20, 30, 40-minute meditation or mindfulness practice. You're lucky if they'll give you 60 seconds of their time. But we do find that our students will commit to doing a single 60-second exercise once every hour. So in neuroleadership, for example, we ask all of our students the following question. We ask a person to close their eyes and deeply relax. And we ask them, what is your deepest, innermost value? And the only objective is to pay attention to the first word that comes to mind. For one person, it might be compassion. For somebody else, it might be love. For somebody else, it might be confidence. For one person, it was grandmother, because their grandmother represented certain values that had deep meaning and purpose. We ask the students to do this exercise for 60 seconds, once every morning for the next 10 days. And then we ask them a series of questions. We ask them, what was your first reaction to this exercise? And a certain number of people always say, this seems, what is this new age woo-woo stuff? I mean, we're here in an accounting class. But that same person will say by day 4, oh my goodness, my stress levels have gone down to 0. My work productivity has gone up. This should be taught to every MBA student throughout the world. So we discovered, looking at the brain science, like I mentioned, Herb Benson's research, that repeating a single word over and over and over again, if it has deep meaning and value to you, will turn on not only 1,200 stress-reducing genes, it'll also turn on 1,000 immune-enhancing genes. So here's a little piece of neuroscience that's practical. We can make use of that. Why not? Anytime you're feeling anxious, irritated, depressed, overwhelmed, if you just sat back and did that yawning, which just slows down all the activity in the brain for a moment, stretch just to get rid of that physical tension, and ask yourself, what is the deepest, innermost value that I want to bring into my next interaction in the world? that's enough to help a person become calm and focused and do better work. And basically, we were so surprised in our LMU classes that 90% of the students found this to be one of the most valuable exercises they'd ever had.
90%. That's huge.
Yeah, year after year after year. Now, in psychology, we had tried to get this study published in the psychological journals. But in the psychological journals, anytime you have anything over 35 or 40%, there must be something wrong with your statistics.
A fluke.
So instead, it was published in the Journal of Executive Education, and now that article has become the second most popular article in the 10-year history of that journal. So we, you know, what we have is maybe about 25 different, and we call them neurowisdom exercises, that we've developed. You know, another great strategy and technique, for example, if you close your eyes for a moment, and again, if you don't relax, then you don't turn off that busy, obnoxious brain that you have. It's very interesting. Your right frontal lobe is constantly jabbering negative thoughts and worries and doubts, and your left side is always is the optimist in your brain, chattering on and on and on. If you can take a moment and just turn off all that chatter, that's where you become more aware of this larger reality surrounding you. And then, in that relaxed state, just recall a pleasant memory, anything. And you can try it right now. Think about somebody you deeply love and care for, or an event that brought you deep joy and satisfaction. And visualize that person's face in that event as if you're reliving it for the first time. And I'm willing to bet that you can feel the corners of your mouth beginning to curl up just a little bit. You're beginning to get a Mona Lisa smile. And not only does that Mona Lisa smile signify that your whole body is becoming relaxed and stress-free, but anybody who sees that Mona Lisa smile, they automatically, neurologically trust you. Well, that makes you a better salesperson, a better therapist, a better parent.
All right, let's take final calls. Angela in Montreal in Canada, international line. Hello, Angela.
Gentlemen, what I like to bring up, ever since I was very young, I've always had dreams of premonitions and see things, and I've had it all my life. And it always comes true. And I have a very strong feeling that you're talking about the brain and how to control things and meditation and all that. I don't do any of that. All I know is that I see things in front of me and they happen. And they happen and I have witnesses because I tell everybody everything I see before it even happens. And they are all amazed. Some people think that I'm telling people and they're doing these things, and that's not the truth. And, you know, I'm not scared of what, because I've had it since I believe 10 years old. My father was the first witness to what I saw, and he was amazed with the story, was exactly to the T of what happened and what I saw. I see spirits. And spirits, and not only my family, I see other people, other things, other people, and I don't understand. I've never seen those faces, but they're telling me things. I also had recently a walk-in experience. I got it from Mr. George Norris' show. I didn't even know what it was. He had a guest one day. I was telling everybody, even a person I didn't even know, an experience where something entered my body and I was blowing out words, and I literally had on my face for the next few weeks creases around my mouth because it was blowing up a voice that I've never had before. So I don't know all these stories everyone is saying. I believe that everything is planned for us. Our tomorrows are planned for us, whether we know it or not. I'm religious, but I'm not extremely religious. I do pray. I do pray because I need that prayer to help me through this. I'm not scared. I see people who are going to get sick before they're going to get sick. I diagnosed my nephew's illness before he was even diagnosed, months before the exact illness. I mean, he seemed like a very healthy person.
Did he listen to you? Did he, Angela?
What I'm going through, and I'm wondering for yourself, what do you think this is, I'm going through, or what is this? I don't explain. I did go to an astrologer when I was 19 years old. He had come from England. He was very costly to go to. I didn't want to go to him.
I can answer your question.
All right, give it a shot there, Mark.
One of the most remarkable things is that no two human brains are wired the same. Each one functions differently, and each person seems to have some incredible strengths in some areas and weaknesses in the other. And we do find examples of people who have extraordinary capacity to predict what's going to happen next, and other people don't have that skill at all, but they may be a great athlete. So we have these incredible brains that are designed to, it's almost like evolution has created a brain that once it is born, it can rewire and reshape itself. And I like to go along with the journey of this and just notice all the amazing ways that it helps us to shape different perspectives of reality. If Andy and my hypothesis is true, that we're always entrapped in this brain and we can never see reality for what it actually is, this allows us to imagine what that reality is. And for one person, like Steve Jobs, they will transform the world outside through their imagination. And an artist will transform it through another way. And that's what creates the incredible diversity of culture that we have.
Well, let me ask you something too, Mark, that with all these various techniques that are out there for everybody, people listening, to gain from this, what would you say is the most important? If you could give this one gift, what would it be?
I think the number one most important way to exercise your brain is to develop your ability to become aware of everything. Become aware of your thoughts. Become aware of your feelings and emotions. And then become aware of the way in which you interact with the other person. Become aware of how your voice sounds, how your words affect somebody else. And then the ultimate goal, can you become aware of awareness itself? We think the moment that you sit back and you learn how to become aware of how your brain is actually operating, we believe that your brain makes a transformation, organizes itself in a better way. And this, we think, is the secret to incredible deep happiness, satisfaction, and well-being.
We've got Jim, the Big Island of Hawaii. Welcome to the show, Jim. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Good evening,
Jim. Hey, Jim.
Thank you so much for taking my call. This is such a very deep and interesting subject. And the story of Gautama Buddha's enlightenment is quite fitting simply because he was the son of the king and was brought around to with an escort, and suddenly he saw sickness. Oh my goodness. And then he saw old age, and he's asking the escort, is that going to happen to me? And then he came upon death. Oh Lord, you mean to tell me I'm going to be a corpse? And then he went to talk to the holy man. And therein lies the story of how Gautama, Buddha, Siddhartha became enlightened.
Well said. Well
and
said.
We think that everybody can have that experience. And I always loved what the Buddha said. When people asked him, are you enlightened? And he didn't say, I'm enlightened. He said, I'm awake. And that if we sit down and we learn how to use very simple exercises, we now have the brain science to show that you become calmer. When you lower stress levels, you eliminate virtually 90% of all the types of diseases that affect the body and the mind.
Stress can kill you. There's no doubt about that.
And so that's why Jon Kabat-Zinn, you know, called it mindfulness-based stress reduction. And all he asked you to do was to take a moment, watch your breathing, a concentration meditation. Then watch how your thoughts and feelings and sensations constantly change. Open-ended, open monitoring, just watching, being aware of how things float by. And now we have the brain scan studies to show that this is probably the only way we know how to actually develop your social brain. That when you do these meditation practices, I mentioned it earlier, the anterior cingulate and the insula, these structures don't even come onto, they're not even fully functioning until you're like 28, 29, 30 years old. This is what allows you to be, to feel empathy towards another person. This allows you to feel compassion for somebody suffering. And this is the area that allows you to make moral decisions. And they've even brought this kind of mindfulness now into the field of economics, and it's called neuroeconomics. And we found out that the brain is essentially greedy. It wants as much of everything as it can, as much money, as much friends, as much happiness, as much pleasure as possible. But other people get jealous if we do not share our inner and outer wealth with the other people. It seems to be that when you do these very simple practices, you end up feeling kindness and generosity towards others. And that's why we're teaching these mindfulness exercises to the business community, to create a whole new world where people can be fair and kind and very sensitive to other people's needs instead of just your own wallet.
Mark, where can people get How Enlightenment Changes Your Brain, the book?
They can order it through Amazon.com. They can order it through their local bookstores. It's everywhere. We even already became a Amazon.com bestseller.
Good for you. Mark, thanks for being on the program, and give my regards to Dr. Newberg again, okay?
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Up next, we're going to talk about the Akashic Records. What are they? What do they mean? A tracking of your life? We'll be back.